In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, May 24th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today on Industry Chatter is Al Fox. Happy to see you in the studio, Al. Thank you very much for being here today. Welcome on in. Let's start by talking about your company. Tell me who you're with, what you do for them, and what your company does for federal employees.
Great. Well, thank you, Francis.
OutSystems is a software company that's been in business a little over 10 years right now. We offer a full lifecycle application development environment. Over the last 10 years, we've assisted over 1,000 corporations in doing agile development projects. And I like to say full life cycle because there's a lot of companies that are involved in application development. And what we do is we not only build the application, but we're allowing you to monitor, manage, and deploy the application, which is very important with all the cloud-based solutions that are going on out there. And on the other end of the spectrum, to actually go and identify how large, so you can actually figure out how big the project is, properly scope it, and identify the dollars, the manpower, and the resources that are going to be required to move this to the cloud.
The cloud is a buzzword on the one hand. I mean, we've seen the 25-point plan, the emphasis on the cloud-first policy, and so on. On the other hand, it seems like we're finally at a point where agencies are reconciled to the fact that not only are they doing this because they have to, they're seeing cost savings, and they're seeing mission efficiency by doing. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. Definitely. So we find a lot of our customers are positioning to be able to move to the cloud. Other of our partners like VMware have done a great job with assisting the government in moving 90% of its resources into a virtual environment and really reducing the operational costs of the overall applications. What OutSystems has been working on is actually the whole dollar spend for the maintaining of the applications. So when you work with our software offering, what you're getting is a way of moving into a standards-based environment so that it'll be cloud-ready. So it can run in a virtualized environment today, and then when you select a private or public or hybrid type of cloud environment, you could rapidly deploy into that environment, and you're ready to go.
What are the main holdups for agencies that are trying to do this kind of transition that you're talking about?
You know, in all the people we're talking to, you know, it's basically getting started, you know, identifying, you know, where is the right place to start. I mean, you know, there's always some low-hanging fruit out there. You know, we run across a lot of applications that are built on platforms that are being end-of-lifed, like Lotus Notes, say. And so they know they've got to get out of that environment and move to a standards-based environment like Java or C#. So what we could do is we could, you know, quickly run through what the functionality of that application is, you know, work with them to figure out the time frame, the manpower, et cetera, to deploy it and move it, and then assist them in moving it into either a virtual or a cloud-based environment.
There is a lot of that stuff out there, too, still, isn't there?
An unbelievable amount.
And I guess the theory all along has been, well, it still works, so why should we mess with something that's still working? I guess we're finally at the point where technology is kind of overcoming a lot of these systems that are still out there.
Well, you know, it's the maintenance dollars. I mean, when you have to throw so much money at an OS2-based application that's still running, eventually you got to say, you know, I can't even buy that kind of hardware anymore. You know, my vendor's not supporting the platform that it's built on top of. I've got to move out of this environment and into, you know, a Java or a standards-based environment. And that makes the decision process a lot easier, especially when you work with your customers to try to figure out what are you paying for it now, you know, what do you want as far as enhancements, and then you got an overall figure to work with.
I think it was either, and my apologies to the agency that it was if I get this wrong, but I believe it was either Social Security Administration or the IRS said recently that there are systems that they can't get anybody to do maintenance on the systems, and their contractors can't get people to do maintenance on the systems. That's how old some of these things are. The language is nobody speaks that language in computer programming anymore in some of these systems.
I mean, it's trying to get a mechanic to work on a classic car.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good parallel.
Only so many people can touch it. Mm-hmm. And tough to find.
So if I'm in that situation, what am I looking at first? Am I identifying the what it is that the system does and making sure that I know all the functionality of it? Or is there something else that I should be thinking about first?
Well, you really want to look for an organization that's done it a lot. Okay, so there's almost a methodology to looking at, you know, what does this application do now? You know, what is it touching? You know, how do the people interact with it? You know, any kind of data that's being passed back and forth. So you really have to have a company that's got a methodology for looking at that. And, you know, we've done it 1,000 times. Our partners, these system integrators who use our technology, use this as a starting point. And they've all built, like, you know, frames around the outside of it to make sure it works in their environment.
Now, you've seen people do this, as you've said, any number of times on any number of different ways. What do you do to keep a project like this out of the way of the GAO or out of the TxDAT session? Because we know that's not – neither of those places is someplace somebody wants to be.
Exactly. And Agile is everywhere in the government. So what I like to say is, you know, using the Agile platform, our technology – we're basically helping you through, I mean, almost putting training wheels on so that, you know, you're getting started right, you're making sure that all the steps are followed through, that you're collecting the right kind of materials and providing it up in your sprints so that, you know, you've got milestones to achieve, you know, what to do. And then, you know, the next time you do a project, you can reuse large components of that. So the reuse factor on agile programming and development environments are very important.
What does that mean for the agency, the ability to use a plan that you've implemented for somebody else? Sounds like it's almost a template where maybe you have to trim it, reshape it a little bit, but by and large, you're not reinventing the wheel every single time.
Yeah, the wheel's going to have a couple bumps on it. But what you can do is you can work within an organization to figure out, you know, what's a standard screen definition look like. So you can reuse that. I mean, there's so much reuse in development environments now.
Why do you think it is that agencies have been, shall we say, not receptive to that in the past? Why have we had historically this attraction to the, we're going to start completely from scratch and do our own thing, when the results historically have not always been great?
You know, every project's different, Francis, but I believe that they really think that this one is so much different than the way that the other department does it that they really got to start from scratch. But a lot of the inherent properties of a human resource system are going to be similar across the board to a travel or a payroll kind of approach. And that's why the COTS software vendors have done such a good job for streamlining some of that, and the amount of custom code is being minimized.
And that leads me to a theory that I'm hearing more and more in the industry side of this equation, not quite so much yet on the agency side, but I want to ask you about that when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Al Fox of OutSystems, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Without a drink. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Research indicates college students can have as good a time at a party when they don't drink. At the Miriam Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island, Laurie Scott Sheldon looked at data on 19 studies involving more than 1,400 college students. Her study found students were less likely to drink alcohol when their beliefs about the positive effects of drinking were challenged. So Scott Sheldon says,
being aware that it isn't the alcohol that causes the outcomes, but the positive expectancies associated with alcohol, triggered by the social setting, may help you limit or avoid drinking.
She says you also can list what you expect from alcohol and create arguments against the expectancies. The study in the journal Psychology of Addictive Behaviors was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Profile America, Wednesday, May 23rd. Many things we take for granted in the current U.S. actually had their beginnings in colonial America. Life insurance is one. While sources vary as to the exact beginning date, it appears to be between 1759 and 1761 in Philadelphia. The first known life insurance company was called the Corporation for Relief of Poor and Distressed Widows and Children of Presbyterian Ministers. Given the time and location, it should not be surprising that Benjamin Franklin was involved in setting up the business. Now there are 946 life insurance companies in the U.S., with nearly 300 million policies in force. Profile America is produced by the U.S. Census Bureau, measuring America, people, places, and our economy.
Supporting our troops has never been more important, and the military's need for strategic procurement decisions has never been stronger. Smart sourcing begins with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better pricing. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your commands' recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your mission, visit gsa.gov/ACQMPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQMPM.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government. Please contact us at advancedalliance.com for more information on potential Alliance Small Business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliance.com.
Are you ready for the federal telework and workforce mobility initiatives? Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VBlock infrastructure platforms with VMware View provide a fast, proven path to desktop virtualization. Industry-leading security ensures that your employees can safely access information whenever, wherever, on whatever device they're using, from laptops to smartphones. By integrating technologies from Cisco, EMC, and VMware, VCE delivers high availability, exceptional performance, and almost unlimited scalability in a world-class converged infrastructure, so you can ensure your employees remain connected and productive in the face of bad weather, disasters, or just their kid's soccer game.
Federal telework and workforce mobility are changing the way people work. VCE can speed implementation, providing everything you need to reap the rewards of improved productivity and better retention, while staying on top of ever-increasing cost, compliance, and performance demands. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. It's Congressional Day. We'll talk with Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly about his plans to make sure small businesses get their share of federal contracting dollars. And we'll talk with Maryland's Elijah Cummings. He's pushing a bipartisan plan to boost protections for veterans from foreclosures and evictions. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Al Fox of OutSystems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned that there's a buzz that I'm hearing around what you've been talking about so far in the program with me, and it regards the budget. I'm hearing folks saying that the budget situation that the government is in is forcing people who would not have previously considered technological changes moving to the cloud, virtualization, some of the things that you and I have talked about. They're being kind of forced into those changes, in some cases against their will, in some cases willingly. And that long run, some folks in industry think this might wind up being a good thing for the government and for the taxpayer. Where do you stand on that?
Francis, I think, it is a tough situation that the decision makers in the government have to do. But they can't continue to maintain the applications the way they've been maintaining them. I mean, there's going to have to be a sea change in, when you look at the application portfolio, there's a huge operational cost, but the maintaining of the individual systems, if I can cut that by a percentage, say 20 to 30%, I'm going to have an incredible amount that I can spend back to adapt to. And what we're seeing in our customers, we've got one DoD customer. You know, he spent 2.5 years and $4 million creating an application. They've ported it into a true Java framework in 18 weeks for less than $1 million overall, and it's costing them a fraction of that to keep it on. So for the cost of the port, they're able to get a model-driven environment with a standards-based platform that they can move to any number of different devices.
And you can just, it sounds so easy to demonstrate return on investment, even in tight budget times, to say, yeah, this is worth spending some money on up front because we're going to realize the savings so quickly. It's going to pay for itself right away.
Year after year.
Yeah.
And what you got to look is the long term. Where am I heading with this? So, it allows me to put it on different hardware as hardware increases. It creates an evergreen application so that, I like the functionality application, but it goes from HTML5 to HTML6 or some new thing happens, and I can very quickly adapt it to support those new environments.
Now, you've mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that you used the term full life cycle. Are agencies still able to think about the full life cycle costs of an application or a program given the budget times that we're in? Because it's real easy to say, well, if you make this investment up front, the first 2 years, say, you're going to realize this much savings over the next 20 years. But the next 2 years might be two of the tightest budget years that we've seen in however long.
Correct. And, again, it's a tough situation that they're in, but they have to take aggressive steps now, knowing that over the next couple years, they know and they see where they're shrinking. So they can make important cuts to the low-hanging fruit. We're not saying rip and replace everything in an organization. Take a system assessment of your portfolio and identify those that are really killing you and say, that's where I want to start. And, you can go application by application. You don't have to do everything at once. So, it's very quickly to work with one of our partners to identify where are my pain points and to hone in on those and go after them.
Prioritization, really important evaluation of everything you're up against.
Very much so.
Yeah. You've used the term agile a couple of times. What separates somebody who is doing a project using the true concepts of agile development from somebody who thinks they're doing it because it's the hottest thing to be doing right now, but maybe isn't really doing it the way that experts would have them do it?
Agile is white hot right now. I mean, you can't go to some kind of an event where somebody's not saying we're doing this in an agile mode. It's very much a term, and the government truly believes and sees value in agile. I mean, every 2 to 4 weeks they're seeing a new version of their application, coming to light, so they can identify very quickly the changes. And a lot of times, if they don't like the contractor that came up with that version, they'll swap them out. So they're looking for these 2 to 4 week sprints to see what the end product is. Now, it is very much an overused word. And when you're using and you're trying to go agile, using a technology like ours is going to help you do all the right things so that I hit all those requirements, and I get them all done. And then I can very quickly make a change. If the government decides that it wants to move from this type of screen to another, if I'm built on top of an agile, model-driven environment, I can very quickly make that change and not have to handwrite a bunch of code.
Now, it seems to me that it's great for the agency to have the ability to swap out the vendor on very short order if they need to. Is that good for you?
Actually, you know, one of our important points is no vendor lock-in. I mean, long range, I think the best advice anybody can give the government is don't lock themselves into a cloud provider, into a programming language, into anything. So no vendor lock-in is something that OutSystems believes strongly in, because we're going to provide you the best service, we're going to provide you everything else, and at one point in time you say you're not doing it right, we give you a completely documented piece of Java or C-sharp code. It also allows you to look at a cloud provider, say, you know, XYZ cloud provider, and you want to move to HP, okay, we can assist you because you've written it in this environment to move from one into another.
It's almost as if we're seeing this transformation from the way we've always done business for the last however long, I mean, the IT's been around the government, to you hear about open source software. This is almost open source acquisition with the ability to move from vendor to vendor pretty much whenever you want. You're talking about providing pretty much complete transparency with documentation. So if I do decide I want to switch, I'm going to get everything I need to just pretty much be able to move freely as much as I want. Am I seeing it correctly?
Yeah, that's where the government's got to be to keep costs down. I mean, you've got to go to the cloud providers with the best service level agreements at the best cost. You've got to make sure that I can support, you know, new frameworks as they become available. You know, we're on our 7th version over the last 10 years of our technology. And over the last 10 years, of course, we've gone from HTML4 to HTML5. And, you know, they're already talking about CSS4. You know, definitions coming out. So as technology changes, we're going to be able to use those within our frameworks.
You mentioned mobile. There's a new mobile strategy out from Stephen Van Roekel's office. It is posted on federalnewsradio.com. And I want to talk about mobile when we come back, just where you see that space in the foreseeable future. My guest is Al Fox of OutSystems on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue in a moment.
Conducting the business of government has never been more challenging, as agencies need to make even smarter procurement decisions. Now you can take the direct path to successful acquisitions with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products, with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better prices. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your agency's recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your agency's needs, visit gsa.gov/ACQCPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQCPM.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
Four airmen have won the Air Force's highest award, the Secretary of the Air Force Leadership Award. The force gives the award to airmen that show noteworthy leadership in the world of military education. One student each from the Air War College, Air Command and Staff College, Squadron Officer School, and the Air Force Senior Non-Commissioned Officer Academy won the awards. The Air Force presented the awards at a ceremony at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's developing information-enabled solutions for the U.S. government to securely access, integrate, and share sensitive data across multiple networks. It's delivering secure collaboration between the Defense Department, Homeland Security, and other agencies. It's providing innovative 24/7 communications operations and maintenance service. Visit exelisinc.com. That's exelisinc.com. Excellus, the power of ingenuity.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
Older people, new experiences. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Learning something new might open other possibilities for older people. Researchers who gave older people training in thinking skills and puzzles to solve report the older people then felt more open to other experiences. Josh Jackson of Washington University in St. Louis looked at data on people with an average age of 73 who had 16 weeks of training, including figuring out patterns and doing Sudoku and crosswords. Jackson says the important part was the doing new things.
It looks like those things are positive. So the extent that people can get out in the world, try new things, exercise their mind, that's all for the best.
The study in the journal Psychology and Aging was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Registration is now open for the all-new Management of Change event, featuring interactive sessions around cloud, mobility, and security, and a future technology expo, June 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency, Cambridge, Maryland. This government industry training forum is hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Register and learn more at actgov.org/managementofchange. That's actgov.org/managementofchange. Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Al Fox of OutSystems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. The new mobile strategy or the combination of previous mobile strategies into one official strategy is available now at federalnewsradio.com. Stephen Van Roekel releasing it yesterday, talking more about it today, and my colleague Jason Miller will join me in the 5 o'clock hour this afternoon to talk about that and bring you up to date on day two developments of the new mobile strategy. Al, you work with agencies through your company on mobile strategies, and you've talked about some of the advantages of virtualization when it comes to mobile and so on. What are the questions that agencies are asking you about mobile and how it fits into trying to develop an IT plan for not just this fiscal year or next fiscal year, but for the foreseeable future when we're dealing with things today in mobile that 2 or 3 or 5 years ago we had no idea we would be trying to plan for today?
And I agree. You know, it's just the technology is just changing at such a pace that it's tough to keep track with. And working with some of the new HTML5, you know, your style sheets, et cetera, allow these BYOD type of things to actually function. So it doesn't matter if I'm on a Droid or an iPhone platform, they're going to operate. And, you know, another thing that we've found is a lot of people don't want data on those mobile devices. So when I leave one in a car and it gets broken into.
You mean they don't want it to rest on those devices?
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
So they want communication, securely, of course, back to where it has to be. I've been very, very impressed with the types of mobile apps that I'm seeing fielded right now. I mean, you know, we've got airmen out there who are being told step by step what to do. So, you know, take this bolt off. You know, use an RFID tag to pull something out of its stack to make sure it's correct, reinstall it, take a picture of that. You know, so the types of thing, all while a step-by-step with some kind of a either acknowledging it verbally or through some kind of a device saying, I did that step, give me the next step. So I don't have to take my eyes off of what I'm working on and get verbal commands from this. And then all of that's going back to some system of record like SAP, so things could be ordered, another one of our big partners there, so that, you know, it's filling the inventory, et cetera. So I know what's on stock, et cetera. You know, RFID, we've seen GPS, we've used the cameras, the voice recognition, you know, just the types of things you can do on a mobile, and They don't cost as much when you break one.
I think we're finally getting to the point, too, from what a number of people I've talked to in government have said, is the government is finally getting to the mode of let's figure out how we can apply all of these things to the mission rather than what are we able to do because of the procurement chain, what limitations do we have because of the acquisition system, all of those kinds of things. It's become more of a mission exercise rather than an IT exercise, and IT is the tool to fulfill the mission rather than we're going to have this many of this particular type of device and so on. Is that fair to say?
I thoroughly agree. I mean, when I started, 20 plus years ago selling, we were selling to IT. I mean, I spend a lot of my time talking to the functional people. How do you need this to work? And then working with their IT people who are part of the team to make sure that, it performs the way the functional folks want it to work, that it, because they're the ones who are really paying for the overall project and, of course, meets all the needs and requirements and security that the IT team is looking for.
Are you talking to more end users all the way through the process than you have before?
Well, there's 100 people have to say yes, and only a couple need to nix a project. So we're talking to people in all aspects. The end users are a very important component. In Agile, the end users play a very significant role. I mean, I was talking to Department of Treasury the other day, and it was all around, to properly get something into production and move through these sprints, I need an end user to use that application and to provide me feedback on what they like or don't like. So we have technology embedded in there so that a user can drag a mouse, put a little bubble up and say, I don't like the way this looks. It should be moved to the other page. So this enterprise change technology assists in the agile process, and it's a really end-user driven. Mm-hmm. You need the end-user's involvement and buy-in to get an agile project to really work.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is, and you've been in this business long enough, you've probably seen some of these. I'm sure your companies were never involved in projects like this, but I'm sure you've seen these projects where the vendor works with the acquisition team and the IT department and whatever. The project takes however long it takes. You turn it on, the end user sits down to use it and says, well, how do I do this? And everybody slaps their forehead and goes, because that never made it in or isn't set up, developed the way the end user needs to work or whatever.
Right.
And that's what I'm getting at with the end user involvement is whether we're kind of over that hump finally. And it sounds like it doesn't even exist anymore because of the nature of agile development.
And agile development and those projects, the end users have to be very heavily involved. It really doesn't work right.
Al Fox is my guest. He's with OutSystems, and he's here for Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute.
This week's Experts in Health topic is summer skincare for kids, featuring Dr. Brent Thibodeau, Chief of Pediatrics in Northern Virginia with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group and practices at the Kaiser Permanente Reston Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thibodeau. Did you know that a handful of serious sunburns can increase your child's future risk of skin cancer? Here are a few tips to properly care for your child's skin. Apply sunscreen with an SPF, sun protection factor of 30 or higher. Check label for broad spectrum, which means it blocks both UVA and UVB light. Dress your child in protective clothing such as long sleeve shirt, pants, a wide-brimmed hat, and sunglasses. Take extra precautions near water and sand, as both reflect the damaging rays of the sun, which can increase your child's risk of sunburn.
Dr. Thibodeau was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
From curbing the AIDS epidemic in children to capturing the world's most notorious arms trafficker, federal employees accomplished some amazing feats in 2011. Now, 33 feds are being honored for their work. They've been named Service to America Medal finalists. Federal News Radio interviews each of the nominees in our Service to America Medals Tracker Series. Find out what makes them tick and what interesting work they are focusing on next at federalnewsradio.com. Search for Service to America.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
The General Services Administration has awarded a one-year contract to IBM to build an energy monitoring system. Larry Melton is the GSA Public Building Services Assistant Commissioner.
All of our buildings have building automation systems, which essentially help our property managers run buildings more efficient. What we're hoping to do with IBM going forward is really connecting all of our systems, pulling as much data as possible, and maximizing the use of that data to change the way we operate buildings.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Many companies say they have a hard time finding top-notch engineers to drive innovation. Now at least one company has an app for that. Rather than just send job seekers to a website, Rich Whitney, employment brand manager at diesel engine maker Cummins, decided to
set up a customized job feed and have those jobs that match their skills come directly to them.
Cummins' mobile app, perhaps a first of its kind, not only provides an easy search of available jobs, but things like a 3D interactive on the latest engines.
Making diesel technology and mechanical engineering overall hopefully seem a little bit cooler and a little bit more interesting to all ages.
Even grade school students.
That is where students get interested in science and math and how engineering is applied.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Al Fox, About Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked about mobile devices and the impact that they're having on the government. At what point do we get to where we're maybe focusing on mobile at the expense of the rest of the way the government has to operate, or am I not headed in the right direction? Do I have the not an either or? Maybe
I don't believe it is an either or. You're going to have agencies that give a mobile device to a portion of their workforce, and you're still going to have people that when they're in the office, they've got a way of working with those mainframe or server based systems. So you have the best of both worlds in that case. Things that mobile devices are very big for are, approvals. Okay, so if I do an HR review on someone and then my boss has to review it and approve it, that's an excellent use of a mobile device because I can look at the whole thing and just very quickly go, boom.
The concept of trying to reshape culture and reshape mindset, I think, is just as important when it comes to this as hardware inventory and the software that runs that hardware and so on. Am I right on that? I mean, there's a whole lot of people that are still, I guess, apprehensive about what all this means and how it will affect them and the way they do their jobs and all of that.
Yes, there's a lot of different viewpoints in that. When I talk to people in different organizations, there's some people that fully embrace what's going on, the ability of being, able to review things and approve it from the field. There's also, of course, a constituency that says, well, that should be done in an office. So it is going to be for some decision maker to say, for my organization, this is the way we're going to do it.
I want to go back to something that we talked about toward the beginning of the program. We talked about all of the various elements of ways that agencies can save money doing some of these things. And I'll be the first to admit, I hate the term more with less. Can't stand it. But the reality of it is that that's what a lot of agencies at least think they are doing right now or think they have to do. I personally would like to see agencies be able to have the flexibility from Congress to be able to get toward trying to do effectively with less. But we'll talk about that at a different time. The whole idea of saving money is something that agencies are really focused on. Where are the biggest potential savings through technology right now?
Reducing the overall maintenance budget is probably the largest line item
Now, when you say maintenance, you're not talking about keeping the machines clean.
No.
You're not talking about that.
I'm talking about an application that exists that, because the IRS tax law changes, has got to be updated. So I've got a core group of individuals that have to find out where those changes are being made to get them up to date. And if you look at most of the decision makers that I'm talking to, their budgets, that is a huge amount of money because every application's got its own support staff, et cetera. So, and again, it's something, it's not an all or nothing. I can look at those applications that are really dragging me down and either rewrite parts of it or all of it into some standards-based environment. So you can smartly prioritize where you should be making your changes and do them on a as-needed basis, basically.
Now, I mentioned to you earlier, in the 2.5 years or so I've been doing this show, talking to leaders in industry like you, I'm not sure that the subject of maintenance has ever come up in more than a very cursory, offhand manner. And yet, you're saying this is a place where agencies can go and save a lot of money. Why do you think that's not an area that has gotten a lot of focus up till now?
You know, I think now because everybody's looking at every line item and, you know, where can I make my big hits, you know, quality assurance of applications is always something that's been very strong. But now they're looking at that and they're saying, well, if I write my software better in a true interactive IDE environment, I can make the changes more rapidly. I can make changes that are going to take note and do and operate properly. So it's, you know, again, your testing is still going to take long. You got to make sure that it's all going to assimilate and be able to be put in production. But when my zip code goes from 5 to 9 digits, I can make changes like that in a flash. What are the ramifications when those changes are made? What do these software applications touch, et cetera? So all that's very inherent.
Yeah, I guess the law of unintended consequences comes into play there, or has come into play there in the past, and it's from what it sounds like you're telling me is not as big a factor as it used to be. Is that fair to say?
Well, you know, what we're finding is a lot of people are working with a platform that's being end-of-lifed. Again, Lotus Notes, okay? They've got to do something now. And so they're scrambling to try to figure out, what am I going to move into? You've got the old Y2K, okay, is raising its head again because applications that were rewritten and fielded back in the late 90s to be Y2K compliant, they all need to be updated and moved to another platform. So there's that whole mesh of new activity also. And again, there's some that are just costing too much to make a change to, or there's too many changes that are required of that application due to regulatory or, you know, IRS, et cetera. They see a lot of changes every year when the tax law changes. So for those rapidly changing applications, this is a perfect way to reduce that cost.
We've talked a fair amount throughout the course of this program about where we are today, a little historical perspective. I want to talk about the future when we come back to wrap up, because that's something that we that I hear all the time. Agency people say, I just don't have time to think beyond whatever my current project is, whatever the time frame is for that. So let's do that a little bit when we come back from the break. My guest is Al Fox of OutSystems on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
At the Jeep brand, we've been on active duty for over 70 years, in conditions you can imagine and some you can't. And like our soldiers, we never shy away from a challenge. So we'd like to honor our armed forces' outstanding service during the Jeep military event. Get $1,000 total military bonus cash toward a new 2012 Jeep vehicle. After so much time in service to others, we're giving our soldiers the recognition they deserve. Jeep. Plus, right now, get 0% APR financing on the 2012 Jeep Compass and Jeep Patriot. Offer available to active military, military reserve, retired military, and retired military reserve with honorable discharge and 20 years of service within 6 months of discharge date on a retail purchase or lease. Excludes SRT models. See dealer for details. Financing for well-qualified buyers through Ally Financial. Not all buyers will qualify. Must take retail delivery by 5/31/12. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Pissarro as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Emily Richards, founder and president of Sade Clarity, which provides corporate wellness programs to clients all around the country. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman. To learn more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Al Fox from OutSystems. We talked a little bit about in the last break about the future, but I want to focus on that in this segment as we wrap up, Al. People tell me all across government, not just IT people, CFOs, other executives in government, I am so focused on what is happening this month / fiscal year / project cycle that I just can't really look beyond that and think the way that I would like to conceptually. What do you see happening that maybe should be on the radar screens of those kinds of folks in the next 18 months, 2 years, maybe even out to 5 years?
Well, it's, that's a very long question. When you talk to organizations, I mean, you really got to say, in 5 years where we're going to be. I mean, the amount of new mandates, et cetera, coming down the line for some of these decision makers is ominous. I mean, got to get a lot more accomplished. Who knows what's going to happen over the next couple of years. So, I mean, I think moving into a true open standards-based architecture so I'm not painted into a corner is going to make life easy for everybody who takes my position moving forward. Having an evergreen application so that changes can be made as technology updates, as new types of devices are available, that, they could be added to what's there, that what I'm building now is not going to have to be thrown away in 5 years. Getting into an environment that's going to reduce my overall maintenance costs, I mean, is something that, it's a large portion of someone's budget. Are all things I think that are very important for the decision makers.
We talked a little bit during the break about FedRAMP. We have the nine, three PEOs, I think is the term for them. As FedRAMP starts to deploy, do you see that being a place where an agency will be able to cut steps because they'll have this overarching framework, and they'll just have to decide how they want to fine-tune it? Is FedRAMP, in your mind, going to achieve what it was set up to achieve?
Well, I hope it does. I mean, I'm thoroughly behind what they're trying to achieve. There's been a lot of work and talk around it. That 70% of this is going to be covered and certified, so I'm only worried about what's unique to my application, I think is a big step. I see a lot of organizations taking things to the cloud, and they're trying to get their underpinnings certified so that, again, just the pieces that I'm snapping in on top are going to hopefully make the certification process, the accreditation process, a lot quicker. You know, and DOD, the whole authority to operate process is, they're figuring is going to change based on what they're seeing because of organizations like the FedRAMP offering.
Is that a model that you expect to see applied to other kinds of technology over the next however long? It certainly seems like it's a model that could work with other things.
It seems to be working, and I think time's going to tell as organizations embrace it and we see how the whole accreditation process is done.
It's been a pleasure to have you here. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Al. Thanks very much for being here. I can't believe we've gone through the time already.
I can't either. Thank you very much, Francis.
Happy to have you. Al Fox of OutSystems, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can hear our conversation again archived later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com. And Industry Chatter is every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The second hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose, right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Yeah.